This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Raj, folks out of Wrigley Field will be dressed the way they would be at Soldier Field.
Oh, I think so. And you know what? They've been waiting there all night long. Lines have been going down the street to try to get some of those tickets. And they've got blankets. They've got parkas. They're keeping warm.
You remember Soldier Field, don't you? Where the Bears?
Yeah.
There was a team called the Bears.
Well, yeah. It's how about Blizzard Bowl? Remember that one? Couldn't even see the football.
So many frustrated Bears fans.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. You know, boy, what a blessing it is to have the Cubs doing so well this year when so many of us are trying to flee the headlines each day and trying to get away from all of this mess. And it's giving us some escapism, I think.
I think it's giving us a lot of hope. Even though for some of us older, I didn't say old-timers, but some of us older people who've been through the ups and downs with the Cubs over the years, it's given us a little smile on our face.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Well, great to talk to you as always, and I think you'll have some headlines coming up here in a little bit. You'll update the latest in the news. Is that right?
Yes, sir. 5:30, yes, sir. We'll be back with you.
We'll look forward to that. Appreciate it. Roger Battish on duty in the WGN newsroom this morning. Max Armstrong on duty alongside him here on the air, and it's great to be with you. Orion is down at the FFA convention. Maybe you heard him mention that he was going to be there handling the television broadcast on RFD TV, which I did last year, and we've swapped roles this year. And he so looks forward to being down there. We'll talk a little more about the FFA and one chapter that has a corn maze that'll be in operation next weekend. All that coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show. A visit with Jim Fazell, as Orion did record that visit just a few days ago. That'll be coming up here right after this break.
We have talked about the fact that Illinois is the number one pumpkin-producing state in the nation. The number that really amazes me is that 85% of the world's canned pumpkins are created in Morton, Illinois. And that one really surprised me, 85% of the world supply. So let's talk pumpkins this morning with Jim Fazell, because it's that time, isn't it, Jim?
It sure is. You just surprised me, too. I knew that there were a tremendous amount of them. The majority of the pumpkin for the United States comes from there, but 85% of the world pumpkin.
Right.
Amazing.
Yes.
Shows you how important our agriculture is in this country to the entire world. Without us, where would some of those places be?
So the big,
anyway,
the big question is, fruit or vegetable?
Oh, yeah, that comes up every year, doesn't it? Anyway, it's interesting, really. Is a pumpkin a fruit or a vegetable? Well, it depends on how you're using it. If it's part of the vine, you're talking about the thing that comes off a vine. It is the fruit of the vine plant. But if you're using it to make pumpkin soup, it's a vegetable. And then there's another question that always comes up, is it a pumpkin or a squash? Well, both of these are vine crops, and they include things like cucumbers and muskmelons and, of course, the squashes. And within the squash family, we have summer squashes, which are generally harvested immature. These are the things like the zucchini and the patty pan and the straight necks and so forth, acorns. But that also includes the standard orange pumpkins. They are summer squashes, and this would be like the New England pie pumpkin, the little one that we use. One pumpkin makes the pie. When you make the pie, let me know. I'll be right around. Jack-o'-lanterns, which are a little bit bigger, and the Connecticut Field and Howden Field pumpkins, which are these larger pumpkins that we see at so many of the pumpkin stands at this time of year. Wonderful for carving, but they're also good for eating, too, if you paint them instead of carving them. Winter squash. These are ones that are harvested when they're mature, and there are things like the butternut, but that's the commercial pumpkin that you were talking about, the Dixon Field or the Buckskin and so forth. And they actually don't even look like pumpkins. They look like tan watermelons. And if you drive down to Morton, Illinois, and you look out in the fields and you see these football-shaped or watermelon-shaped things out there that are brown, that's commercial pumpkin. It's the same color as what you get in the can. Good stuff. There are also other winter squashes that are used as pumpkins. The giant pumpkin contest. Now, we're hearing about that now because they're popular right now, and we're going to see things in the paper about these people raised this pumpkin that weighs 1,000 pounds or better, moved it in with a forklift, and actually weighed the thing. The biggest pumpkin contest is interesting in that if the pumpkin has not turned yellow yet, it's considered a squash, which is a different category. If it's turned yellow, it's a pumpkin. So there you are again. Is it a squash or it is a pumpkin? Well, it's whether it's green or whether it's yellow.
And let me give you one more fact. The biggest pumpkin ever grown, 2,215 pounds.
Wow. Where was that, Orion? Do you happen to know?
It was in Illinois, but I'm not sure where.
Wow, isn't that something? Well, you know, that's quite a skill to be able to do that. And everyone that grows one of those has his own secret seed source and secret as to how he grows it. I've known a few people that have grown 1,000-pounders, but I've never heard of anyone growing one that weighed a ton.
Yep.
That's amazing. Anyway, Illinois, the record, as you just mentioned, is well over 1,000 pounds, but we can expect them to be 1,000 pounds or better at every one of these. And then there's another kind of pumpkin that we do see around here on occasion. These are becoming more and more popular, and these are the painting pumpkins. It's not because they look painted, it's because they're white, so that you can paint the faces on them and so forth. And those are very interesting as well. Then there are a lot of others like the French one that's the carousel from, Cinderella's carousel. Cinderella's coach, that pumpkin it's got a French name which escapes me right now. But using the pumpkins, of course, we carve them, and the pipo or the small pumpkins are excellent for painting or for carving and for pies. But as I mentioned before, if you want to use it for a pie, you can paint it because you're going to take that skin off the outside anyway. If you carve it, then you worry about the fact it may deteriorate. The Hubbard squash is another one that we didn't mention before, but it's like a pumpkin. But these things will stay very hard and are excellent for making pumpkin soup or any kinds of squash that pumpkin pies and so forth, any kind that you'd want to make. But the interesting thing about them is that they will last all winter if you keep them in the basement where they're cool. They'll keep till spring, and you don't need to be afraid to get a few. So what are we saying? The pumpkins are pumpkins, but they're all squash. Incidentally, the pumpkin farms are in full swing right now.
Yeah,
they are. You can see them along the roadside, and some of the bigger ones really have a lot of things going on. You know, we head out to Gobert's out in Barrington every year because of the various activities to see all the kids and see all the wonderful harvest that's out there. They have pony rides and petting zoos, and some of these places have all kinds of Halloween stuff for sale, as well as stuff for the garden. And while you're at the pumpkin farm, you might cruise around while the kids are enjoying some of the activities and look for some of the stuff that's still available, like the apples. We mentioned them a couple of weeks ago. Potatoes and onions and other items, too. They have honey and cheese and mushrooms and baked goods. And then the stuff for finishing up the garden, like the mulch for your perennials or cones for your roses and so forth. It's a good time to pick those up. So take the kids out and have a great time in the outdoors. Enjoy the pumpkins. Know there's a little history to them and that we have more here in the state of Illinois than anywhere else in the United States. Enjoy that outdoor weather while it's still nice.
And the good thing about this year's pumpkin crop, they don't have the disease problem they had last year that did cut into the size of the pumpkin crop. So plenty to carve and plenty to eat. Thank you, Jim, and you have a good and safe Halloween when you go out trick-or-treating.
Will do.
Okay, Jim Fazell with us here on the Saturday Morning Show.
It's the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio, 22 minutes past 5. Last night, via the social media, I encouraged farmers to share with me their progress of harvest in their particular county. And I heard from people as far away as North Dakota and Nebraska. An agronomist in Nebraska, Mike, said in that area around York County, Antelope County, Burt County, he said one problem they've had in recent days, they've had fog or rain in 10 of the past 14 days. So that has slowed the harvest there, especially of the soybeans. And some folks in Illinois checked in. Alan down in Morgan County, that's the west central part of Illinois, west of Springfield there. He said they're 90% harvested on corn, 80% done on soybeans. And he said the soybeans yielded from the mid-60 bushel range to the low 70s. And Alan seemed to be disappointed with that. He said he had hoped for more, especially when you've got a national yield of better than 50 bushels. Jared down in Iroquois County said they're done with the beans, but they've got quite a bit of corn left out right around him. He said the soybeans were a top priority when the weather was good. Maria, Greene County, Illinois, 80% done on corn, 90% done on soybeans. Down around Warsaw, Indiana, JR checked in with me. He said they've probably got about half the corn out of the field yet there. Soybeans, about 70% done. Steve in DeKalb County, about half done on the corn, he thought. And maybe there's still some soybeans left out there. He said hadn't been out checking around quite a bit. But Steve pointed out that the one complaint he's been hearing from the growers is not enough semis. Several of the larger operators have to farm over a wider geography, and with more bushels to harvest, it's taking a little bit longer to get the trucks turned around. I talked about this progress on harvest just the other day with Brian Split at Allendale Incorporated, and he commented,
"We've got a really good pace going right now, and we expect a rather aggressive pace to continue. There doesn't seem to be any major weather problems to be seen in North America. And really, if there are any slowdowns, it would just be maybe some rain up in Ontario, but not here domestically. So pace is looking great, and we're going to have a really strong finish to harvest, it looks like."
Let's do a little bit of yield conjecture here for just a moment. And, of course, it's not all conjecture. I mean, we've had some good, solid data from crop reports. Is it your feeling, as we take a look at what is happening with the corn harvest, that that number is yet to come down some? Many analysts are of that opinion.
Yeah, and I think I can agree with that, although I would say that we shouldn't get too excited about the yield coming down materially. And we also have to realize that with the projected carryout levels, even after the last yield reduction, that it's going to take a rather aggressive yield reduction to get carryout down substantially, where it's going to mean a major difference to the prices.
It would have to be something under, what, 170 bushels? And we're not likely to drop under that, are we?
No, I don't think so. And heck, if you take the yield down to, let's just say, 170.4 from the previous estimate we had in September of 74.4, 4 bushels an acre is going to be maybe about 365 million bushels. And the way the USDA will manage balance sheets, they don't take that whole production loss off the top of carryout. It's going to be maybe rule of thumb about half that. So even if it was, let's say, 200 million bushels that they lopped right off of carryout, we're still at a 2-1 plus carryout. And that is still going to be, you know, a 400 million bushel difference from about this time last year. So I think it's not likely to see the same levels achieved for our fall-winter high this year that we did see last year.
What happened with all of that crop tour talk about quality problems that we had back in the month of August after the August crop report came out and ahead of the September report? All of that chatter about problems out there on those ears of corn, is that yet to be accounted for?
Well, I think that's part of the yield coming down slightly, you know, and there's been little issues here and there, some diplodian and some other things. But, you know, maybe if we do have a little bit lighter test weight this year, these are things that will come out as we get into some of the quarterly stock reports down the road. So once we get maybe to January and we say, all right, during the first quarter usage, we used a little bit more than we thought. And that might be due to some of these issues that we're addressing right now. But the USDA won't address that on these monthly reports. That'll come out on a quarterly stock report when all of a sudden it looks like there's bushels gone. And it's because we're using more of it faster, because it takes more of lower test weight, lower quality corn to do the same job.
So as we've seen in the past, even after a November crop report, which, by the way, comes out on the 9th, the day after the presidential election, and even after the, quote, final numbers are posted in January for the year, we sometimes still see those numbers from the crop of the year before coming into play, coming into some adjustment.
Right, and the USDA does reserve the right to adjust a previous year's crop. We see that especially in soybeans, where typically in a September quarterly report, they'll go back and they'll adjust the previous year's crop. And, you know, these guys have a three-dimensional chess game that they are playing, and they're doing their best to estimate where stocks will be quite a distance out in the future. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of categories that they have wiggle room to adjust. But, you know, it's always a work in progress month to month and year to year.
You mentioned soybeans. Let's talk about the yield there. The feeling is it could be inching up a little bit more. Many analysts are of that opinion anyway. Do you share that view?
Well, from talking to producers, it seems between the two crops that the soybean crop is definitely the one that is continuing to outperform. Although maybe recently some of the later beans may not be seeing the extreme yield results that the early planted beans are. But either way, we are seeing a record crop. This would be our third record soybean crop in a row domestically. And we've got, four or five record crops in a row in Brazil. And I think it's pretty incredible that we are seeing these record crops year after year and hemisphere to hemisphere, and yet the world stocks to use for soybeans has come down 2 years in a row, and our world stocks to use for vegetable oils has been coming down for about the past 5 years in a row, and that's why this bean oil market is such an integral part to maintaining strength in the soybean market, even despite these rather large yield reports.
Interesting insight from Brian Splitt. Brian is with Allendale Incorporated at McHenry, Illinois, as he stopped by our studio this week. Coming up, yet on the Saturday morning show, Samuelson Says. Big O will check in. And he'll also share a visit about something both Orion and I will be involved in 2 weeks from tonight in Naperville. It's the plans to build an interpretive center for agriculture in that DuPage County community. That's all coming up here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Thanks, young man. Always good to hear from you and good to visit with you in person.
Sounds good, sir. Always a great time spending it with you, too.
Take care. We'll see you later.
You got it.
Roger Badish on duty in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday morning show. And coming up, we'll talk about the planned agriculture interpretive center that will be smack dab in the middle of Naperville, Illinois. And a couple of weeks from tonight, Orion and I will have a barn raising. We'll be hosting a barn raising is what they're calling it. That visit we'll share with you coming up here. And Big O has his weekly commentary next, presented by Wink Products.
The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, as well as color fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 67 years and it's still number one. To learn more about Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. The attacks on GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in our food supply just keep on coming. Coming from individuals and organizations who base their argument on emotion rather than science. I don't hear any complaints about the use of GMOs coming from starving and hungry children in developing countries of the world. But here it continues. That's why this week I commend the leaders of several farm organizations who said to Danone, the maker of yogurt, enough is enough. Danone recently pledged to eliminate the use of safe and proven crop technology to feed the dairy cows that supply milk for its yogurt products. Danone is one of several prominent food manufacturers and retailers that in recent years has taken steps to eliminate genetically modified ingredients from its supply, claiming that such a move improves the sustainability of its products. But this week, leaders of the American Farm Bureau, the American Soybean Association, the American Sugar Beet Growers, the National Corn Growers, the National Milk Producers Federation, and the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance said, enough is enough. So they sent a letter to Mariano Lozano, who is the head of U.S. operations for Danone, And the farm group said the company's strategy to eliminate GMOs is the exact opposite of the sustainable agriculture that you claim to be seeking. Your pledge would force farmers to abandon safe, sustainable farming practices that have enhanced farm productivity over the last 20 years while greatly reducing the carbon footprint of American agriculture. One of the leaders said this is just marketing puffery, not any true innovation that improves the actual product offered to consumers. It's time that more companies took that kind of a move, because without the use of technology, the world will continue to increase population and the percentage of the population will go hungry. GMOs do play an important role in the world. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O, thank you much. Samuelson Says, heard each Saturday morning here on WGN Radio, where Mr. Samuelson and I have the privilege of visiting with you, sharing some of the story of agriculture with you. He is at the FFA convention down in Indianapolis. Yeah, it's in Indianapolis this year. For years, it was in Louisville. Before that, it was in Indianapolis. Before that, it was in Louisville. Before that, it was in Kansas City for decades, back when they called it the Future Farmers of America. But young people in an FFA organization today are training for much more than just a career as a farmer. Now, some are, and it's represented by what they call the stars of the FFA. They announced four stars, and I would imagine Orion will talk about this next week. But these are outstanding young people. People like Shane Mueller from Garrettson, South Dakota, started his own custom haying business. He's the star in agribusiness and the star in agriscience from South Dakota. Elizabeth Renner from Crook, South Dakota. She's done research with aquatic organisms. A star in agricultural placement from Minnesota, Murdoch, Minnesota. Brett Peterson owns PFI Farms Incorporated, growing sugar beets and field corn, sweet corn, peas, alfalfa, soybeans, more than 6,000 acres owned by this young man. And from Garber, Oklahoma, the American star in agribusiness, Tyler Schnaithman. He's been involved in the production of sheep, cattle, wheat, and alfalfa. So it's an interesting bunch of young people, very sharp young people. It kind of restores your faith in our future, if you have questions about that, especially during this election cycle. The young people seem to really have it all together, and hopefully we'll be able to get some outstanding leaders for our states and our nation from that bunch of young people of the FFA. You'll hear much more about that from the Big O, of course, next weekend. Coming up next, he shares a visit about something both he and I will be involved in 2 weeks from tonight. That's up next on the Saturday Morning Show.
Joining us in the studio this week is Raina Calabrese. Raina is the president and CEO of the Napier Settlement. And that settlement has a big event coming up very soon. We welcome you to our program. And before we talk about the event, let's talk about place and date.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. The place is Napier Settlement in Naperville, Illinois. The date is November 5th, and the time is 6:30. Please come join us. It's an event like no other.
Okay, let's find out why it's an event like no other. What's going to happen on that Saturday night?
We are having a barn raising. We will have a wonderful farm-to-table dinner, and it will be to support the Agricultural Interpretive Center that we hope to build in the next 2 years to really tell this story of agriculture, not just in our own community, but really throughout our state and our nation. It is going to just be a jean and jacket event, so no big fancy balls. We are going to have it catered by Big Delicious Planet, one of the best urban farms. And you will have experiences like no other, and it will start with a couple of the tractors that will be welcoming you. Mm-hmm. And you'll be eating right beside another beautiful, beautifully conserved and restored tractor from our community that has a fabulous legacy to it.
Napier Settlement has been around
a long time. How long, and is this your first real venture into agricultural history?
So Napier Settlement has been around now for over 40 years. We are a nationally accredited museum and the only nationally accredited outdoor museum in the state of Illinois. And so while we have, in telling the story of our community and our region, delved into agricultural life, particularly as we tell the 19th century story, we have not done anything like this. This is really the next step. To be able to interpret what agriculture has meant for us as a community, but also for us as a nation.
You mentioned a couple of tractors, but what artifacts are you going to have in this interpretive center?
So we will definitely have, we have been collecting for a good almost 100 years. And so as you might imagine, we have a tremendous amount of artifacts from the 19th century. But we also have a thresher, a 1912 thresher, that is actually going to be conserved tomorrow. It is leaving on its long journey for conservation, and it will return to us beautifully done new. And it will be home, that will be its home for many generations to come to really learn about what our farmers have done for us over over so many centuries now, I guess, over the last two, three centuries.
So as a kid, I worked with a threshing machine on the dairy farm in Wisconsin. Will this one do any work, or will it just be a stationary thresher?
It will be a stationary thresher because we don't have enough room for it. It will be indoors, and so there's not enough room for it to actually do what it does. However, we will have photographs, and we will have footage. And most importantly, we will have the stories of those folks that actually did work the threshers and talk about what it meant for them on a variety of levels, how it built community, because as you know, they all shared them, how it built profitability into the or for the farm, or what they needed to do the next year to actually work better. So there's a lot of ways that the stories and the interpretations will take us. And as you may know, we welcome over 35,000 school children and have had close to 2 million visitors. So it will be seen heavily by many people that perhaps have never seen a farm equipment, let alone such a large farm equipment.
If you're a second generation off the farm and think you still know farming, you don't, because it changes so much, changes so rapidly. I know why I think this is important, because for 56 years I've been trying to let Chicago consumers who listen to WGN know that it all starts with food. Nothing else happens until we take care of food. I like the Chinese proverb that says a person who has food has many problems. A person who doesn't have food has only one problem. So what is your feeling and the feeling of the other people working with you on why this is important?
Well, I'll tell you, there is no real good way to tell the American story, that is the whole overall story of America, without touching upon agriculture and touching upon our farmers. Yep. As you well know, our founding fathers were themselves farmers, number one. And many times there are the stories of Benjamin Franklin, our first head of the State Department out in France. And, you know, the French would usually say to him, yeah, but you don't have these beautiful marbles, this, and you don't have the history and the richness that we have. Yeah. And he would always turn to them and say, but we have something more important. We have rich, fertile land. And that was the way that America really entered the economic market and the international market on a much more even playing field. And so our farmers were our first scientists, and our farms were our first labs. And so because we were able to feed a nation, a large nation like this one, then we can, like you said, have a lot more problems. There are still nations in the 21st century that have one problem. They can't feed their people. And so that's part of the important part for us, is we were looking to see whether this was something that would fit our mission. We knew that irrespective of where you lived and what you did and whether you were or were not a farmer, how you interact with your food determines how you live, because it touches upon medicine, it touches upon your economy, it touches upon the professions, your nutrition. So many aspects of your life start with how your food is grown and how much you have to be able to go on and move into so many other fields that might be important.
I have to ask this personal question. With your passion, have you had a connection with agriculture all your life?
I have indirectly. I immigrated to the United States as a young girl, and so my family had farms. They actually had dairy farms, and they had banana farm, believe it or not. And so, indeed, I do remember going there and seeing the hard work, because farming is such hard work. But there's nothing like the taste of food or milk or any of those things when it just comes straight from the farm. It's an unbelievable experience.
Before we have to say goodbye to you, Max and I are looking forward to being there to be part of it on November 5th. But one more time, place, date, and how do they get more information?
So first of all, thank you so much for being our MCs. We are thrilled to have you both with us.
Well, we are too.
Thank you. Once again, November 5th at Napier Settlement. It is in Naperville, Illinois. And, of course, you can go to napersettlement.org and look at our website, and you'll be able to find that information, everything that you need to know about why we're doing this, as much as also hoping to have you at the event that day.
Thank you for joining us. A visit with Raina Calabrese, who is the president and CEO of the Napier Settlement.
Thanks, Big O. We appreciate it. Yeah, that's going to be fun. We look forward to that. 2 weeks from tonight, the 5th of November, right smack dab in the middle of Naperville, Illinois. And agriculture will be in focus that night and increasingly in the future, as the Interpretive Center is built there. Boy, Orion and I are coming into a very busy time. That will be just ahead of going to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting meeting. Both of us attend that event every year. That'll be in Kansas City. And then I'm involved in one of those Mecum auctions, the antique tractor auctions that have become famous. Some of you have probably seen their car auctions on television, but they also do antique tractors. And there's one out in Davenport, Iowa, at the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds, and that'll be coming up the weekend of November 11th and 12th. I'll be there on Saturday the 12th, helping out with the television broadcast and visiting with folks. Yeah, they record those for RFD television replay on RFD TV, on the Dish Network and DirecTV and a whole bunch of cable systems. So it'll be fun to be out there with Dan Mecum and the folks. Their base of operation is right up across the border in southern Wisconsin, but I tell you what, it's just electric in the room when they do an auction of those antique tractors, and some of them bring incredible values. As we saw last fall, when a Farmall H in original condition, Farmall H out of northern Illinois, brought $40,000 at the auction. What should it have brought? Well, I mean, if it were just a pedestrian, restored, tinkered with H, that's $40,000 is probably 10 times more than it would have ordinarily brought, I'm guessing. You know, depending on the condition, that's a highly variable thing. But when you have two people, that's all you need, two people who want it. And it was an amazing, amazing original condition tractor, and it brought $40,000. There was a gasp throughout the room. Yeah, it was kind of amazing for those of us who were watching the process. FFA chapters get involved in a bunch of fundraising activities. Some of them sell citrus during the holidays. Some of them grow produce to sell. Maybe they're selling pumpkins this time of the year. The FFA chapter at Newark, Illinois, has a corn maze. You know, there are corn mazes all across the country. I'm aware of corn mazes in North Carolina, in Georgia, in Texas. There are a bunch in our WGN listening area. where folks go out and they can buy pumpkins and they can buy apples and they can enjoy what we call agrotainment, the experience of being out on the farm. Well, this corn maze out at Newark at the Newark FFA will be a haunted corn maze. And they'll have that in operation this coming Friday night, the 28th, and also on Saturday night, a week from tonight, the 29th. The Haunted Corn Maze, Newark High School, Newark, Illinois. They'll open up at 7:30 in the evening, and the Haunted Corn Maze, not just any corn maze, mind you, but the haunted one, will be open until 11 o'clock. Newark FFA, Newark, Illinois. Get to town, you can't miss it. Folks can guide you there and send you to the corn maze at Newark. We'll check the news. Mike Stephen is standing in the wings. He always has something interesting to talk about. He'll be along shortly. Along with the big O, Mr. Orion Samuelson, Max Armstrong here on the Saturday Morning Show. A privilege to visit with you this morning. Really enjoyed it. Thanks to Mr. Robert Ferguson, our engineer on duty. Mr. Stephen, how have you been, you rascal?
Man, I am just great, Max. How are you?
Very fine, sir. Thank you. I always enjoy listening to you on Saturday mornings, even if I'm not in the area. You know, I listen this time of the year. I can hear WGN on the Skywave.
Nice.
If I'm not listening on the internet, and I'll listen to you five states away.
Well, see, that's the goal. That's the goal. I appreciate that. Everything okay in your world? I know your granddaughter is, I'm sure, just keeping you busy.
Oh, she is so much fun. I think we're creating a monster, you know. I worry about that. I worry about us being a bad influence on her, you know.
But that's what grandparents are all about. You're the cool people.
I just don't want my daughter and my son-in-law to have to undo, you know, something I've started.
Yeah, as a parent of a 19-month-old little guy, I got you. I understand what you're saying. We love grandparents, and we love Max Armstrong. Hey, man, always great talking to you. Great show.
Thank you, sir. Take care of yourself.
You got it.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.